This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
What I think is the upside of prohibition is that we can see what works in the rest of the world and profit from it, both economically and from a sustainability perspective.
All of us have seen the explosion of hemp-based products. Hemp seed oil and hemp clothing seem to be everywhere. But up until now, all of these items have been imported into the U.S. Well, the ban on industrial hemp, a crop which, for some strange and suspicious reason, got lumped in with its psychoactive cousin during this country's anti-marijuana laws of the 1930s, finally looks to be ending. Our guest this week on Sea Change Radio, author Doug Fine, tells us why this is such a promising development for both environmentalists and capitalists. Fine explores the long and fascinating history of hemp in America, a crop that was actually illegal not to grow in colonial days, and examines how industries are finding new and exciting ways to innovate with this hardy and practical plant. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Doug Fine. He's a comedic investigative journalist, best-selling author, and solar-powered goat herder. Doug, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
It is fantastic to be with you, Alex.
So your new book is Hemp Bound, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Next Agricultural Revolution. So why is hemp the next agricultural revolutionary product?
I have to say that the hardest thing about discussing hemp is not sounding like you're a roommate with the lava lamp, because as a seasoned journalist of 2 decades experience from 5 continents, you know, this is my 4th book. I came back from 2 years of field research and realized that your roommate with the lava lamp was actually right about hemp. The applications are astounding, and they blend in a very important way. They make sense economically to farmers and processors. They are going to help change our food and energy system, and they've given me, as a father, serious hope about humanity's climate mitigation strategies. How do you talk about that and not have people think that you're wearing a tie-dye? Of course, I am wearing hemp clothes as usual, but that you're not wearing a tie-dye, you know? That's the hardest part. The biggest application that I'm excited about vis-a-vis hemp is energy. Hemp produces an astonishing per acre yield of biomass. So at first I thought, when I started researching hemp, I thought, okay, ethanol, you know, from a non-food product that is better than GMO corn and soy as ethanol. And I quickly realized I was steered away by the experts about cellulosic ethanol not quite being ready for prime time yet. But what is ready for prime time is a process called gasification. It's allowing entire parts of Europe to wean from fossil fuels and, in fact, wean from their grid and allow themselves to produce their own regional energy.
This is different than coal gasification that we hear about.
It is. It's different than coal gasification, although in former coal country, in Kentucky, there's a super conservative utility owner that named Roger Ford, who is planning on planting hemp because one of its qualities is it will grow well in marginal soil, and using the hemp biomass in a gasification facility. So it's a relatively carbon-friendly way of producing energy from farm waste that would otherwise be unused.
Let's take a step back and give us a bit of a history on how and why hemp somehow got intertwined with the drug war.
Okay, let's take a step back 10,000 years. There's a recent find, actually 9,000-year-old in this case. A Stanford-led team a few weeks ago found incredibly well-preserved hemp clothing in a grave in Anatolia area of Turkey. So it's one of humanity's longest utilized plants on the food side, the seed oil side. The Persians have called it Shah Dinah for thousands of years, the king of seeds. It's the go-to high-protein energy snack on the way to soccer practice in a place that doesn't have Doritos.
Right. What is this place you talk of that has no Doritos?
I think Iran, actually. I mean, I haven't been there in a while.
They must have Doritos.
Tajikistan didn't have them.
At least not no Cool Ranch Doritos. Let's just say.
Yeah, that's right. They're three marketing campaigns old. Right, so humans have used hemp for a really long time. Fast forwarding a little while. Gosh, there's so much I could tell you. Someone brought one of their family heirlooms, 1731 book about the Dutch Reformation printed in Dutch, to an event I did in Colorado, and printed on hemp. And it's just this beautiful book that looks like in mint condition. Moving forward to somewhat modern, the Japanese emperor attends coronation dressed in hemp. The Thomas Jefferson's draft of the Declaration of Independence was written on hemp. Virginia colonists could pay their taxes with their hemp crop. It was that valuable.
And I learned in your book that Betsy Ross sewed the first American flag on hemp.
Yes, and a hemp flag, although not fiber grown in the U.S., hemp flag flew over the U.S. Capitol last July 4th, thanks to Jared Polis, who really, the congressman from Colorado, he really allowed last year to be, in the last 10,000 years, hemp's biggest year. He was able to lead the effort to insert a hemp cultivation provision into the farm bill that passed this past February. So 77 years of this terrible anomaly have ended. And one quick thing about, I call that an astonishing no-brainer, because as you said, it's confounding that this typo, I'll go to the banning of hemp here real quick and talk about those 77 dark years.
Yeah, maybe walk us back to 77 years ago and how that happened, if you can.
Sure. So 1937, the Marijuana Tax Act was passed, also one of our nation's worst policy decisions since, you know, along with segregation and other DDT, other big, big mistakes of the 20th century, Japanese incarceration, that kind of thing. Taking our access to this hugely important plant and hugely economically valuable plant away for no reason. You know, even on the psychoactive side, the American Medical Association opposed the criminalization of cannabis in 1937. But industrial cannabis, which, by the way, so industrial cannabis is synonymous with hemp, and it's any version of the cannabis plant that has 0.1% of THC or less. Most everywhere else in the world grows it. Canada is about to broach $1 billion on its 15-year-old modern industry. Not that anybody listening here today will probably need this, but just so you know, there is no way to confuse psychoactive cannabis with industrial hemp. It's happened exactly zero times in Canada's modern 15-year history. So back to 1937. Essentially, in a typo, hemp gets banned along with psychoactive cannabis. This doesn't go over very well. Immediately, it starts shipping. Note, the drug war immediately starts shipping jobs offshore.
Were there any representatives of competing crops or anything that had a stake in trying to outlaw hemp?
There were plenty of players and industries that had an interest in hemp being squelched. However, we don't have a smoking gun on the most popular theories, and that probably have some truth to them. I'd like to time travel back to 1935, 1936, and have Hearst be in the club, the wood-paneled club with the brandies and the cigar with Hearst and DuPont and cotton interests and synthetics interests and paper industry interests.
Go kill Hitler.
That was right. Okay, while I was there. But I'd probably do that before finding out the truth about whether or not hemp banning was a part of a big conspiracy. The fact is, there was a ton of reefer madness, yellow journalism, and, you know, ridiculous stuff printed in the Hearst newspapers, but that could just sell newspapers. That's just sensational stuff. He did that on a ton of topics. So the conspiracy theory, I if I were doing one of those myth-busting websites, I would say, you know, probably true, but unconfirmed. Nonetheless, even after the 1937 effective banning of hemp, and what it is cultivation now required a permit that was almost never given by the USDA. So all of a sudden, the Navy, which still needs 40 tons of hemp rigging per vessel, and by the way, the webbing on the parachute that saved George Bush Sr.'s life when he bailed out in World War II was made of hemp. All of a sudden, we're getting it from the Philippines, but whoops, 1942, Japanese capture the Philippines. And there's this fantastic, remarkable propaganda film that the USDA put out called Hemp for Victory that sounds like Your Roommate with the Lava Lamp. You can watch this on YouTube. It's like 13 minutes long. And it sings all the praises of the applications I will be talking about here in this chat about what hemp really does and what it has to offer, and begs farmers to cultivate it. But we didn't actually get around to codifying the end of that prohibition until this past February.
Always hate me for what To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm joined by author Doug Fine. His latest book is Hemp Bound. This is one of these issues that makes my blood boil, that we had 77 years of hemp being illegal. But I've just, you know, tweeted about it and done a few radio shows. But you've really become an activist about this. You've lived this.
On the Funky Butte Ranch, where I live in the middle of nowhere in New Mexico, full-on hemp cultivation will have a significant impact in my overall effort to basically live a fossil fuel free life and as, you know, as sustainable a life as I can. And what I envision is, so we have 40 acres. I envision a kind of checkerboard pattern of planting hemp interspersed with other alfalfa for animal feed, you know, food, vegetable type garden for the family. And it's soil restorative when it's grown, and I'll have a hemp seed oil press, so that I love the organic hemp seed oil that I buy at my food co-op, but it's expensive because it's Canadian grown hemp and there's carbon miles involved in shipping it in plastic bottles. Why not just press the oil on my own farm? Use that seed cake that's left as a fantastic high protein animal feed. My goats can't wait for it. I went to a study that showed hens that were fed hemp pass those omegas on to the eggs in a higher way than corn-fed chickens. So, and there's all tons of applications. I'd like to even be using that biomass in a community-based energy processing facility. So hemp's legalization is going to have an immediate impact on my family. My girlfriend happens to like to make clothes, and she says she makes a lot of our family's clothes and a lot of them out of hemp. And when I wrote the second, this is now the second paragraph of Hemp Bound, I didn't know that it was going to happen so quickly. This dream was going to come true of the federal government representing us and legalizing hemp. But what I wrote was, my plan the day hemp becomes legal is to begin cultivating 10 acres of the plant so that my sweetheart no longer has to import from China the materials she already uses to make the shirts I wear in media interviews like this one, to discuss the fairly massive economic value of hemp. In a cynical age, we can use one less irony. It's allowing me to put my money where my mouth is and live more sustainably from an easy to grow, you know, weed basically that humans have been cultivating for 10,000 years.
Now explain to us what is in the new farm bill and what that means.
It's a huge step for so many reasons. What the POLUS amendment actually says, the hemp amendment in the farm bill this year says, is that states that already have hemp legislation can, with alongside university research, begin to research hemp. And that actually is important because the germplasm from hemp died out in the National Seed Repository. I know I interviewed a researcher who went to check, kind of an Indiana Jones, like blowing off the dust and opening the crate in the back of a warehouse, and all the seeds were rotted. So we do have to rebuild the genetics of what was once the sort of the pride of the world.
And that's relevant because we can't necessarily import seeds like we would if we were a marijuana grower from the Netherlands, because these were native or semi-native plants that had been developed for the different climes that they grew. Is that
big
correct?
Hemp states like Wisconsin, Illinois, Kentucky, yeah. But we can import, and that's another big deal about this year's Farm Bill, is that hopefully now our hardworking law enforcement professionals at the Drug Enforcement Administration will allow viable seed to come through the border. It was an issue I visited with Ryan Laughlin, the first American commercial hemp farmer in modern history in Colorado. I visited him last season, and he was planting, risking raid and risking his family's federally subsidized farm so that the genetics can start to be rebuilt. So it's a really big deal. I think we need to go further and allow full commercial cultivation on the federal level. In other words, entirely remove cannabis of 0.1% THC or less from the Controlled Substances Act and allow that to just be regulated by the USDA. It's not even part of drugs anymore. Of course, I think all cannabis should be moved from the Controlled Substances Act with states allowed to regulate the psychoactive varieties. But specifically on the hemp side, there's no argument on this. You know, Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, is on this, as is Senator Ron Wyden, who now is putting forth S-359, which would, it's called, I think, the Industrial Hemp Cultivation Act of 2014. But folks, call your senators to support S-359, your U.S. senators, so that we can go beyond just the university research. Quick other note on the university research side of things, there are those who say, let's let Darwin decide. We have this ditchweed in Nebraska that was a very effective erosion control, and then the cattle were put out to be fed on them all over the heartland, which has, by the way, big implications in climate change ravaged places from American heartland to Mauritania and Zimbabwe, how quickly hemp works. Ryan found out also that it uses half the water that his previous year's wheat crop did, which is a big deal in eastern Colorado because the Oglala Reservoir is drying out and folks will be able to dry land crop hemp. So there's huge climate change mitigation implications in addition to the energy applications at the beginning. But there's those who say, let's just use that ditchweed that survived and rebuild our industry with that. That's what the pioneers did. They carried a handful of hemp seeds across into the wilds of Illinois with a handful of seeds in a coffee can. So we could do it that way, but this is really, the Canadians have built this very, especially with the seed oil, a very professional billion-dollar industry. And you can't just, you know, let's say you were growing, melons. You can't just deal with a major Safeway supermarket chain and say, I'm growing Joe's melons from my grandmother's seed. Everything has to be very uniform and organized. And that's why we kind of have to rebuild our stock of cultivars as the strains are known on the hemp side.
So you mentioned how in the farm bill that recently passed, that hemp got a green light from Congress. But what does that mean on a state-by-state basis?
It means now that the 13 states and growing, actually it's 14 on April 30th, Hawaii's governor is signing their hemp legislation. So it'll be 14 states. This stuff is moving so fast, this issue, are able to do university research on developing cultivars for their farmers. If you're in a state that's not one of those 13, you know, I urge you to work on that. And then we also want to support S359 on the federal level, which would just remove industrial cannabis, otherwise known as hemp, from the Controlled Substances Act. So everybody everywhere can cultivate it regardless of their state law. But in most of those 14 states now, they're going to start doing that university-based research to rebuilding the seed stock. But Colorado's gone further. I was there on the first day that their agriculture department was issuing permits to farmers to grow unlimited amounts of hemp for commercial cultivation. So this industry's happening. It's back and it's going to start growing from season one this year.
Follow The Shift to Sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm joined by author Doug Fine. His latest book is Hemp Bound. He's also written books such as Too High to Fail and Farewell My Subaru. So Doug, in the book you had mentioned wheat before. You said how this is pretty much analogous to outlawing wheat, the insanity of the hemp prohibition of the last 77 years. You say that there's 25,000 industrial uses of hemp or around that amount, but you focus on a dozen in the book. Why don't you summarize some of the more important uses of hemp?
Well, the biggest reason that hemp is going to be coming back in a big way now that it's re-legalized here in the U.S. is because of the profits that farmers are making today from hemp seed oil in Canada. In other words, all this earth-saving stuff that I'll get into after that can only come about because farmers are businessmen and women. They're only going to plant a crop that makes them money and can work in their damaged monoculture, damaged soil. So the Canadians are profiting. $300 per acre on hemp. Many of these farmers are growing thousands of acres. So 1,000 acres, $300 profit per acre. It's a third of $1 million profit for a farmer on a bridge crop. They can grow other things during the same growing year. It's an incredible hemp boom in Canada right now. They can't keep up with demand from us in the U.S. We buy 90% of the crop. And when I visited the biggest hemp seed oil processor in Canada, he was the CEO was and founder was undergoing his fourth expansion in 10 years. Hemp is the real deal. It's going off. It's an omega balanced superfood. I went to university study. You know, everything in Hempbound is documented as a journalist. You know, I wasn't just relying again on the roommate with the lava lamp. So, American farmers immediately planting for the seed oil have a market. There's buyers for it. I'd love to see American farmers get together and form regional processing so that we can have locavore industry. But from season one, there are buyers if you're growing hemp seed oil. There you go.
And hemp is not something that is not on the shelves. Americans have been consuming it for well over a decade. And as you just noted, it's growing in popularity. But this is all imported?
Yeah, the actual cultivation is imported. I mean, this is what we fought the American Revolution about. And what I think is the upside of prohibition is that we can see what works in the rest of the world and profit from it, both economically and from a sustainability perspective. So the Canadians are growing almost exclusively for hemp seed oil. They grow these little plants, a cultivar called Finola from Finland, super seed dense, just basically little seed bushes. And I put it in my shake every morning. It's a fantastic health food. Great for animal feed and beauty care products as well. So in the putative American processor, I'd like to see one third of the factory devoted to that seed oil. Then looking to Europe, and yes, now everything has to be imported. We cannot yet until this year cultivate. Colorado farmers are cultivating commercially this year. Looking to Europe, they're known for the really high-end fiber applications. I visited a processor of a 20-year-old company called Hempflax in the Netherlands, and their fiber goes into BMW and Mercedes door panels today. I held it. It's remarkably strong. It's strong to greater tensile strength than steel, and also surprisingly silky and soft. They're super high-end product. Another fiber application is textiles. I'm always draped in hemp these days. The Chinese are the leaders on that. The textile industry calls softness hand, and the Chinese have got their hand on their hemp down to the softness that you'd see in a like industrial cotton t-shirt in a McChain store in a mall. Of course, 30% of the world's pesticides come from cotton. So being able to do that from hemp, which the Canadian Agriculture Department in their grid of advising farmers for hemp under pesticides and herbicides, it says none needed. So it's a much friendlier plant to the earth to grow than cotton. And now you can get it as silky soft as cotton as well. The fiber application, though, that I think is going to be the first killer app in the U.S. along with the seed oil. So we got 30% of our processor full of these hemp seed oil presses, which are very low tech. They're just smush the seeds and the oil comes out. The second third of the factory, I think, is going to be for processing fiber for the construction industry. Visited some university studies and hempcrete, which is mixing up chopped up hemp fiber with lime, provides an insulation R value that's better than pink insulation without any of the off-gassing and the high heat needs and the petroleum-based building materials that we've been building with for the last century or so. The reason why I think that's going to be a big application, not only because it's cheaper and works better, but also because there's not a huge learning curve for processing that fiber. If you need to get at that high-end fiber that we were talking about for BMW door panels, 21st century applications like 3D printer plastics and all those nice biocomposites that hemp can provide in a green, clean way, that's great, but you really kind of have to know what you're doing. And that's true somewhat a little bit for publishing as well. I'd love to see hemp paper come back. After all, the book is titled Hemp Bound. I'd like to see it bound in hemp. But I think that this hempcrete application and construction is going to be really big on the fiber end. And then the big, we talked a little bit at the beginning of our chat, the big third of the processor that I want to see is these small, inexpensive gasification units that allow farms and communities to be independent of fossil fuels right from the first season. It's just, you're tossing the unusable cellulose in there right from the field.
So one of the reasons I'm guessing that we tie the term hemp with marijuana and tie-dyes and lava lamps and alternative culture is that it's been illegal. But now that it's coming from out of the shadows, how long do you see the process taking until the big boys start to come in? And I mean, hemp may go the way of the soybean. I remember in the 70s, soy was just only something hippies would consider, but now it's actually being over-harvested and becoming, a lot of people think, too much of a part of our food system.
Hemp has a brand. And again, I think it was out of Purdue. There's been a study about the fact that because it is associated with organic living, righteousness, good behavior, progressive values, that it has a really big head start in the marketplace once it starts to really return. Those of us who have been using hemp products for years are sort of like, yeah, we know this already, but regular folks are just now, for the first time, hearing about hemp since it's becoming legal to cultivate in the heartland. And I have interviewed a lot of people in very conservative parts of the heartland who think, you know, President Obama was born in, you know, Saturn or somewhere, and are still have no problem with cultivating hemp. And that's because of the prices. But the stigma really has gone away. But hemp would do well, I argue in the book, to maintain its brand, because that's its really its strength. I have no problem if Big Ag moves into hemp. And instead of amber waves of GMO grain waving in the breeze in the North Dakotas and the Nebraskas, we're seeing, you know, green, huge, vast fields of hemp. And that's what the cover of Hempbound represents, a huge, vast green hemp field. I have no problem with that, as long as it's not genetically modified, because there's always, you know, the organic hemp oil that I'm going to buy is going to be as local and as small batch as it can be. And if there are others who buy other kinds of hemp products, that's fine with me.
What are financial analysts in the commodities markets predicting for hemp?
Most new industries fail. That's a fact. You know, when you have a new idea, a new project, a new industry, most of the time it won't get off the ground. But I believe hemp is going to get off the ground right from year one. Partly it's because of the enthusiastic and growing consumer base. Partly it's because of the huge prices that farmers are getting for their seed oil today. But the real reason is, if this energy production, biomass gasification at power plants, already starting, plans are starting in Kentucky via hemp biomass, starts up in a big way, millions of acres of this, let's say in North Dakota, going to domestic energy, I think industrial cannabis is going to be bigger than psychoactive cannabis, which is saying a lot, because psychoactive cannabis is already in the top three or four U.S. crops cultivated. And the reason why I say that, the shorthand for me, is that Coors is big, but ExxonMobil is bigger. And if we're truly going to make a hemp biomass-based energy system for allowing communities to have a distributed fossil fuel-free grid, not only are you going to see the fastest multi-billion dollar industry in American history, but we're going to see hemp be a vital, vital tool in our climate change mitigation strategy as a species.
Doug Fine, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Eric Clapton, Bob Marley and the Wailers, and Otis Redding. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidioedu.org.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.